Good morning. It's Monday, February 17th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, protest resignations at the Department of Justice. Nebraska, a state that relies on an immigrant workforce, braces for deportations, and disaster in Kentucky after deadly floods. But first, an outbreak of measles is sweeping through parts of Texas. State health authorities report at least 48 confirmed cases, but say as many as 300 people might be infected. It's Texas's worst outbreak of the highly contagious disease in 30 years. The majority of confirmed cases are in Gaines County, along the New Mexico border. The Texas Department of State Health Services says every infected person is either unvaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. Most of the confirmed cases are school-aged children.
It is troubling because this is completely preventable.
That's Dr. Amesh Adalja, an infectious disease physician at Johns Hopkins, speaking to CBS.
And I think this is really a reminder that measles is still a risk, and it is kind of the canary in the coal mine. It's the most contagious infectious disease known to humans.
The measles virus can live in the air and on surfaces for up to 2 hours. That means an unvaccinated person can catch the illness even without being in the same room as an infected person. According to the Dallas Morning News, the outbreak in Gaines County is largely concentrated in the Mennonite population, a religious sect that one Texas health official described as close-knit and under-vaccinated. In the county, nearly 18% of all kindergartners were exempt from the measles vaccine in the 2023 to 2024 school year. That's much higher than the national average of 3.3%. This outbreak comes as the nation's leading health official, newly confirmed Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr., faces ongoing scrutiny for his long history of anti-vaccine activism. He downplayed that history in his confirmation hearings and told senators he believes vaccines play a critical role in healthcare. And NPR reports that Kennedy now has influence over a key panel called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which guides U.S. policy on vaccines and recommends the vaccine schedule for kids and adults. Public health reporter Ping Wong explained for NPR how that could impact vaccinations nationwide.
The committee decides what gets covered free of charge by the Vaccines for Children program, which about half of the nation's kids are eligible for. And the Affordable Care Act also requires various types of health insurance to cover vaccines that this group recommends as well.
Shortly after his confirmation, Kennedy told Fox News he doesn't trust people who serve on advisory panels like this. NPR notes the people on this particular panel are typically experts with advanced medical degrees who specialize in vaccines, pediatrics, and the immune system. They also hold regular public meetings to discuss what the latest science says on the safety and efficacy of vaccines. But Kennedy has questioned the motivations people have for joining these kinds of panels.
In the past, those people, almost all of them, have severe conflicts of interest. And that's not good for our country.
Former CDC Director Tom Frieden has said that's not true. He said committee members are vetted for conflicts of interest and ties to vaccine manufacturers. And once they're on the panel, they're required to file annual disclosure reports. Wong on NPR said during the confirmation hearings, at least one senator expressed concerns that Kennedy could replace all of the panel members with vaccine skeptics like himself.
I spoke with experts and former members of the committee, and they all agreed with that. They said there's just not a lot of guardrails in this group.
Let's turn now to the wave of resignations that rocked the Justice Department at the end of last week. It started when prosecutors were ordered to dismiss charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams, which include bribery, fraud, and conspiracy to personally enrich himself by working with foreign nationals, charges that he has pleaded not guilty to. The person who directed prosecutors to drop the case is Emil Bove, the number two ranking official at the Justice Department. Bove said the DOJ's prosecution of Adams would interfere with Adams' upcoming mayoral campaign and impact the mayor's ability to take action on crime and illegal immigration, as the Trump administration has directed. So far, at least 7 officials at the Justice Department chose to quit following Bove's order to drop the charges. Reuters reporter Sarah Lynch covers the DOJ, which is supposed to be an independent, apolitical arm of government. And she told us the country hasn't seen something like this in decades.
Arguably since the 70s, when famously Richard Nixon asked his attorney general to fire the special prosecutor who was investigating the Watergate break-in.
The resignations started with Danielle Sassoon, the former U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, who was Manhattan's top federal prosecutor. She previously clerked for conservative judges, including Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. In a letter to the attorney general, Sassoon wrote she believed the law does not support dismissing the charges against Adams, and she felt, quote, confident that he committed the crimes. Bove responded by saying he would strip the case from Sassoon's office. He opened an investigation into her conduct, and Lynch said he kept pushing to get the case dropped.
He went down to the career prosecutors in Washington who work in the public integrity section of the Justice Department. Now, that's the section that does the most politically sensitive investigations. And he tried to ask them to file the motion to dismiss. And they, too, refused and resigned. Then he went to the next level of management when the 2 top people there had refused to follow his order. And those 3 also resigned.
One lawyer who resigned wrote that only a, quote, fool or coward would obey Bove's order. But one person ultimately did, Edward Sullivan. The Washington Post spoke to sources who said at first all the lawyers who were asked to do this agreed to resign rather than follow the order. But Sullivan, who is close to retirement, offered to be the one to sign the dismissal motion to save his colleagues from being fired and give them time to find new jobs. Prosecutors have argued that Bove's reasoning for dismissing the charges against Adams so the mayor could work with the Trump administration on immigration initiatives appears to be a case of quid pro quo, which both Bove and Adams have denied. However, Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, who appeared on Fox and Friends alongside Mayor Adams just before the weekend, described what sounded like a quid pro quo type of agreement.
If he doesn't come through, I'll be back in New York City,
right.
And we won't be sitting on the couch. I'll be in his office, up his butt, saying, where the hell is the agreement we came to?
Lynch told us this incident has amplified existing concerns about the DOJ's conduct as the Trump administration continues to fire and reassign career officials.
It gets to the point where you question who's there left to say no if there's an order given that might not comport with the law. And I think that's what people are questioning right now.
The motion to dismiss the charges was filed on Friday and signed by Bove himself. A judge needs to review it before Adams' case is officially dropped. Now to a state that could feel the sweeping effects of Trump's immigration crackdown harder than most, Nebraska. Immigrants make up the backbone of Nebraska's meat processing industry. The state is one of the top meat producers in the country, but it has one of the worst labor shortages of any state. A study released last year by Nebraska's Economic Chamber found there are only 39 workers for every 100 open jobs. And the report concluded there's really only one way to fill all these roles.
They found we have to become the most welcoming state to foreign-born residents in the country.
Jasmine Garst is NPR's immigration correspondent.
And they literally use the words, we don't have a choice.
At the same time, Nebraskans overwhelmingly voted for President Trump. And if his mass deportation plans impact Nebraska, it would not only affect the state's economy in a major way, but also our wider food system. Some residents told Garst they're not convinced Trump's efforts will actually impact them.
Overwhelmingly, what I found among Trump voters in Nebraska was the belief that he's not really going to do it. That at the end of the day, President Donald Trump is a businessman and that he will look out for business interests and mass deportations are not business interests.
But as she traveled through Nebraska for her reporting, she noticed how fear has transformed communities already.
It was just like these empty streets, going to the bars and the restaurants. I mean, I spent a fair amount of time there, and it was very quiet. And the people who would speak to us told us that they just felt a sense of anguish. You know, I would have restaurant owners be like, people are going to work and home. People aren't risking it. And so what I found was these ghost towns.
Since Trump's inauguration, immigration raids have been concentrated in major cities like Atlanta, Los Angeles, and New York. According to ICE, immigration officials are making anywhere from 600 to 1,100 arrests a day. The Washington Post reports the town of O'Neill, Nebraska, is still recovering from a raid during Trump's first term in 2018. A number of businesses closed after they couldn't find workers to replace people who were detained, and at least 100 families moved away. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're watching. The Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to weigh in on his firing of Hampton Dellinger, a Biden appointee who leads the Office of Special Counsel. The OSC is an agency that investigates whistleblower reports filed by government workers. Dellinger turned around and sued the Trump administration, saying his termination violates a law protecting leaders of independent agencies from being fired by a president without good cause. As the Washington Post puts it, this is the first time Trump is appealing to the Supreme Court for help in his efforts to seize greater control of the federal government. Meanwhile, Trump posted this phrase to social media over the weekend, quote, "He who saves his country does not violate any laws." This comes as some of the president's allies have challenged the legitimacy of judicial checks on Trump. The original quote has been attributed to French military leader Napoleon Bonaparte, who declared himself an emperor. In New York, five people were charged with second-degree murder in the death of a transgender man authorities said suffered prolonged abuse and torture. One state police captain called it, quote, "one of the most horrific crimes I have ever investigated." Authorities said 24-year-old Sam Nordquist was abused between December and February, which led to his death. All five suspects are being held without bail. And heavy rain and extreme flooding led to 8 deaths in Kentucky this weekend. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear said most fatalities were due to people getting trapped in their water-submerged cars. Tens of thousands of people were without power. President Trump approved the state's request for a disaster declaration and authorized FEMA to coordinate relief efforts. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Time Magazine spoke with researchers who are racing to understand why more young adults are getting diagnosed with cancer. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.